Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah that you'll find 16 lines from the top of Daf Chof Tes. But before we begin the actual Mishnah, let's glance at the side of the Gemara where we have a nosei, a topic heading, and mivneh, a structural note combined into one. We feature Roman numerals 1 and 2. The Mishnah is divided up thusly, and we read the note, Haromas Yedei Moshe Bamilchoma. The Mishnah opens with a pasuk dealing with a war that the Jews had with the Amaleki people at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the pasuk mentions that when Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands, so the Jewish people would be in the stronger position during the military effort. And the Mishnah asks, what difference does it make where Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are positioned? The next point will be regarding the Nechash HaNechoshes, a form, an image of a serpent that was made at the time of a plague that beset the Jewish people in the desert. And upon looking at this snake image, they were healed from the plague that was afflicting them. These are Shnei Maisim, two stories, two incidents. Shatzolas Am Yisrael Hitrachasho, that the salvation, the victory and salvation of the Jewish people took place, Achrei Histaklusam Klapei Malo V'Shibud Libom Lashem. After looking upwards, so this caused thoughts of heavenly thoughts and the willingness to surrender to the Almighty, yielding salvation and victory. We now look at the Mishnah. V'hoya, and it should be noted that the context of this discussion has to do with the general topic of kavona, of intention, that we've been discussing till now. And it was when Moshe Rabbeinu raised his hands, so the Jews gained the advantage in that particular military effort. Do the hands of Moshe make the war, make for victory, or make for Shavros Milchoma, break the efforts, ruin the efforts? Eloloi Marloch, rather, this shows me, Kolzman Shohoyu Yisrael Mistaklim Klape Malo, with Moshe Rabbeinu's hands raised, so that caused the Jewish people to look upwards, heavenwards, Umeshabdim Eslibom Laviem Shevashamayim, and then surrender their hearts, surrender their thoughts to the Almighty, the Father in heaven, Hoyu Misgabrim. Then they gained the advantage. The Imlav, and if they didn't do that, Hoyu Noflim, so they would fall. Kayotse Badovar Atomer, similarly, we have a Pasuk, Asei Luchos Sorof, Vesim Oisoi Al Nes, make for yourself a Sorof as a serpent. In fact, if you look at the word Sorof phonetically, you can see the first three words of serpent, the S-R-P, Sorof, have the same phonetic root. So make for yourself an image of a Sorof, Vesimo So'alnes, and place him on a pole. So Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to make this serpent image and place it on a pole so it could be raised high. V'yokol Hanoshuch V'ra Oisei V'chayin, and all those that were afflicted, that were bitten, would look at this and live. V'chi nochosh meimis, o nochosh mechaya, can an image of a snake kill, or can it make someone alive? In fact, there might even be a remez here to something deeper. Does an actual snake kill or create life? This is reminiscent of the story involving Chanina ben Doisa and the poisonous creature, and what he said in what I believe was Maseches Brochus on this topic. But the question right now is regarding this image. Does the image really make a difference? Ella, but rather, Mizman Shisrael Mistakun Klapi Malo, when the Jewish people would look upwards, Umishabdin Mislibon Avim Shebashamayim, and subservient, make themselves subservient to the Almighty, Hoyu Misrapim, they would experience healing. Vimlav, Hoyu Nimokim, and if not, they would deteriorate. At this point, the Mishnah goes onto a new topic. And in introducing this section, we have a topic heading, Mihem HaChayovim UMihem HaPturim MiShofar. Who is obligated and who is exempt from the mitzvah of shofar? Mi Yochel or Eino Yochel LaHotzias O'Achir. Who is capable or incapable of providing the mitzvah of exempting someone else through sounding the shofar? The Mishnah continues, Cheri Shoite V'Koton Ein Motzien Es Harabim Yedei Chayvoson. The Cherish, the deaf mute, the Shoite, the imbecile, or the Koton, the minor, cannot enable others to fulfill their obligation. Zehaklal, the following is the rule. Kol she'eino mechuyev badover, anyone who himself is not obligated in the mitzvah, eino moitzi es harabim yedei choyvosan, he cannot enable others to fulfill their obligation. Tonu Rabbonan, hakol chayovim betkias shofar. Everyone is obligated in the mitzvah of the shofar. Koyhanim, Ulevim, Visraelim, Gerim, Vavodim Meshuchrorim, Gerim or converts, Vavodim Shorim, freed slaves, Vitumtum, Vandroginus. Tumtum is a person whose identification organs, his sexual organs, are covered. So it's not clear whether this is a male or a female. Vandroginus, in English referred to as an androgynous, he or she actually has both signs of gender identity. Mi shechetzio yeved v'chetzio ben chorin, someone who is partial slave and partially freed. This can be a situation where a person, a slave, had been owned by two people, and one of the owners freed the slave, thereby the slave acquiring for himself half of his own control and his other half remaining enslaved to the other owner. Tumtum, we just mentioned before, Eino Motzi, a person who is a Chetzio Eved and Chetzio Ben Chorin, or a Tumtum, Eino Motzi, he cannot exempt Lo Es Mino, Veloi Es She'eino Mino. He cannot serve in the capacity of exempting others. Neither people like themselves nor someone else. Androgynous moitzi es minoi, avol loy es she'eino mino. The androgynous can enable another androgynous to be to fulfill the mitzvah through blowing the shofar for him, but he, the androgynous, cannot exempt someone else, someone other than another fellow androgynous. Mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin, einoi moitzi loy es minoi v'loy es she'eino mino. Someone who is partial eved, partial ben chorin, cannot enable exemption, cannot perform the mitzvah for someone like themselves or someone else either. Before we can go on, just a correction in the way we read this Tanaic source. At the end of this source, we read correctly that the Misha Chetzio Eved V'Chetzio B'Chorin is not Motzi, Lo Esmino V'Lo Eshimon. He doesn't exempt people like himself or anyone else. Above in the source, we had read this Misha Chetzio Eved V'Chetzio B'Chorin as part of the continuation, but really it was the seventh example of those that are obligated in the mitzvah of shofar. And then after that, the latter part of the source, beginning where we have the aleph for tumtum, is where the source began discussing the ability or inability of these individuals, the tumtum, the androgynous, and the misha chetzio ev chetzim choren, with respect to exempting others. Continuing now in the Gemara, Omar Mar, we mentioned above, Hakol Chayovim B'Tkiya Shofar, Kehanim, Levim, Israel. Everyone is obligated in the mitzvah of Shofar, and the source went on to list the Kehanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. We're going to now involve ourselves with a discussion that we introduce with a topic heading on the side, Ma Bo HaMishnah Lelameid. What does the this Tanaic source come to teach us? The Mishnah, more accurately, the Brisa, what does it come to teach us? The Katani Hakol Chayovin B'Tkiya Shofar. Who's coming to be included when you say everyone is obligated, and then you list off Kehanim Levim Yisraelim? So that includes, that's basically all inclusive, or practically all inclusive. Who else is intended over here? The Gemara will feature a volcano shape in our markings, which we call under our Mivneh heading a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take piece of the style of Gemara, with the narrow part of the trapezoid or volcano facing up. They are kushios, and when you see it inverted, those are tshuvos, responses. We'll also be highlighting the expression salko daita chamino with a double underline, indicating what I would have thought had something not been said. So now the Gemara. Omar Mar, we quote from above, Hakol Chayovin, B'Tkiyas Shofar, Kehanim, Levim, V'Yisraelim. Everyone is obligated in the shofar blowing. And the Mishnah then, after saying everyone is obligated, lists Kehanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. Pshita, well, that's obvious. Ihani lo mechayvi. If they wouldn't be obligated, if the Kehanim, Levim, and Yisraelim wouldn't be obligated, Saman mechayvi, who else would be obligated? The Gemara answers, Kehanim it's the richole. It was necessary for the source to spell out that Kehanim are also obligated in the once a year mitzvah of shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah. Why is it necessary to spell that out? So the Gemara answers, and it continues, and it's a long answer. Yisalka Daita Chamina, had this not been spelled out, I would have thought, Hoyel Uksiv, since regarding the shofar, it says, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, it says, Yom Shura Yelochem, the day of blowing, the day of trumpeting, shall be for you. Day, indicating singular, one day. Man de lese, Elo, Betkia de Chad Yoma, who de Mechayev, he who is obligated in a once a year shofar blowing mitzvah, so he is the one that's obligated to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. The Hani Kehanim, however, these Kehanim, they serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Hayil v'isnu b'tkiyos dechol hashanah. And with regard to the Beis Hamikdash, and that's the place the Kehanim function, there's shofar blowing throughout the year. Dechtiv uskatem b'chatzotz rois al oiloisechem. There's a trumpeting on the offering during the offering of sacrifices. Emo lo lechayvu. The Kehanim maybe aren't obligated in the Rosh Hashanah shofar blowing. Just to repeat, as far as the Rosh Hashanah shofar blowing, the Torah refers to that as a once a year mitzvah. So we would think that whoever is involved with shofar only once a year, so they're the ones that are obligated to hear the shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah. However, Kehanim, they're not once a year participants in shofar blowing. They serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and shofar blowing takes place there every day. So I would think that since they're an everyday type, they have an everyday association with the shofar blowing, so they're not obligated in the mitzvah Rosh Hashanah, which is a once a year shofar blowing. Komash Malon, therefore this Tanaic source had to spell out that Kehanim are also obligated in the Rosh Hashanah mitzvah of shofar blowing. The Gemara asks, me, Domi, are they comparable? In other words, how can you say that I need Kehanim to be spelled out because I would have thought something else? The Kehanim, as far as the Pasuk we just cited is concerned, Hasam Chatzotzros, V'Hacha Shofar. In the Beis HaMikdash, they blew the trumpet. A trumpet is a metallic. In fact, it's made of silver. It's metallic, and that is what the Kehanim participated in. But the Torah, when talking about Rosh Hashanah, speaks about a totally different thing—a shofar, the horn of an animal. So where would I have come off thinking that Kehanim are not obligated in the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah shofar blowing? So, once again, we have to find out, we have to answer that question of why was it necessary to say that Kehanim, Levi, and Yisrael are obligated. If they're not obligated, who else would be obligated? Elo, the Gemara answers, Itzterich. I need this to be spelled out. I need the Torah to spell out that Kehanim are also Chayav. Why? Itzterich. I need this. Salkadai techamina. I would have thought, Hoyulutnan, since there is a source that we've learned already in the past, and it says in the source, Shaveh hayovel l'Rosh Hashanah l'tkia u'lebrachas. Yovel is a reference to the Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, and during the Yovel year there are numerous mitzvahs that apply to land purchases, etc., and their return to the original owners. So Yovel, namely Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, is compared to Rosh Hashanah regarding the Tkia, regarding rules of shofar blowing, and Brachos regarding the liturgy. So I would have thought as follows. Man de'isei b'mitzvahs ha-Yovel. He who is charged with the laws of Yovel, isei b'mitzvah de Rosh Hashanah. He is bound by the rules of Rosh Hashanah, hearing the shofar blowing. The Torah has a gzeirus shofar between Yovel and Rosh Hashanah. In other words, the Torah compares these topics. So he who is bound by the rules of Yovel is bound by the rules of Rosh Hashanah. V'hani kehanim hayovel lesnehu b'mitzvah de Yovel. The kehanim, though, the Torah exempts them from the Yovel obligations. Skipping the bracketed section for a moment, which gives you simply background for this, Eimah mitzvah de Rosh Hashanah lo lechayvu. So once again, Kehanim that are not bound by the laws of Yovel, as the Torah spells out, they maybe are not bound by the rules of Rosh Hashanah, don't have to hear the shofar blowing. So therefore, Komash Malon, it was important for the Brisa above to spell out that Kehanim as well are Chayav in the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, even though they're not bound by the rules of Yovel. The bracketed section now we go back and we read the line before, V'hani Kehanim hoyel v'lesu b'mitzvah di Yovel, desnan Kehanim u'levim moichrin li'oilam v'goyalim la'oilam. And here Rashi gets into a great deal of detail, but for our purposes, we want to keep things simple for one's first learn through of the Daf Gemara. So we're simply going to say that this source is telling us that Kehanim Levim, by telling us Meichrim Lom Goylim Olam, is a way of saying that they are not bound by the restrictions and obligations of Yovel year with regard to land sales and buybacks of land. So since they're not bound by the standard rules of Yovel, Eimo b'mitzvah de Rosh Hashanah lo lechayvu. I would think that regarding the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, which is tied in. The Torah compares Rosh Hashanah to Yovel. So since they're not involved, the Kohen and Levim are not involved with the Yovel, maybe they're not involved with Rosh Hashanah either. Komash Malon. Therefore, it was necessary for the Tanaic source to spell out that Kohanim and Levim, even though they're not bound by the standard laws of Yovel, they are duty bound to hear the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. Now, as we go on, we have a new topic heading with a structural note. If you see in your Gemara, you notice a house marking. These represent Rav Huna and Rav Nachman. Those are the names highlighted with the house shape. They're Chokim b'chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin im yochel lahoitzi in the shofar es atzmoi. Can a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin blow the shofar for himself? We already saw that they cannot exempt others, not someone else that's a chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin, and not someone else that's of regular status. What about blowing for themselves? The Gemara. Omar Rav Huna. And we should maybe read the Dibur HaMaschil. Mi shechetzio eved chetzio ben chorin, eino moitzi lo yasmino v'lo yasheino mino. Someone who is partial slave, partial free man, cannot exempt someone else like that, nor a standard individual. Omar Rav Huna, ula atzmoi moitzi. Rav Huna points out, though, that the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin can blow for himself. We should point out, maybe we should have mentioned this earlier, in the Mishnah made reference to a freed slave as being chayav in mitzvah's shofar. What about a regular slave, an eved knani? So a regular slave is not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar, being that the Torah compares the eved to an isha, to a woman. And we know from the Gemara in Kiddushin that mitzvah saseh shazman groma, positive commands that are time-bound, women are exempt. Likewise, avodim are exempt. So that's when it comes to a full-fledged eved. Someone who is a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, so there is this element of his being obligated because part of him is a ben chorin. A ben chorin is a freed individual. So we've seen so far that they cannot exempt others. What about them blowing for themselves? So Rav Huna says these chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin can blow for himself. Omar le Rav Nachman le Rav Huna, maishna l'achirim delo. Why is it, or what's different about the fact that he cannot exempt others? The la'asi tzad avdus umapik tzad cherus, the part of him that is an eved cannot exempt the part of the part of the chatzi eved chatzi ben chorin is part slave. So that part of him isn't going to be effective in exempting others that are free people. Li'atzmoi nami lo osi tzad avdus didei umapik tzad cherus didei. Regarding himself as well, when he blows the shofar, so the part of him that is slave is in effect exempting the part of him that is free, and that cannot be. Elo Omar Rav Nachman, af li'atzmoi eino moitzi. Not only can he not exempt others, but he cannot exempt himself either. Tanyo nami hochin. We have a brisa supporting this. Mishechetzio eved vechetzio ben chorin, af li'atzmoi eino moitzi. Someone who's part slave, part free, cannot exempt even himself. Now, as you can see, we have a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. Toni Ahavo, Ahavo is a name, Toni Ahavo Brei de Rebbe Zera. So Ahavo teaches the following source. Kol HaBrochos Kulon Afalpi Shiyotza Moitzi. With regard to all different types of benedictions, even if a person himself has fulfilled his obligation of reciting the bracha, he can still exempt others. He can recite the bracha, others listen to it, and they will fulfill their obligation. Chutz mi-birkas ha-lechem u-birkas ha-yayin, with the exception of benedictions made over bread and wine, which really is inclusive of all kinds of things that one benefits from, we call birchas anen, food and reyach and smell. She'im lo yotza, if you want to eat something and you haven't made a bracha yet, so motzi, so you can make the bracha aloud, and others who want to eat can also be exempt by listening to your bracha, because you have yourself not fulfilled the bracha requirement yet. So when you do make the bracha on the food that you want to eat and someone else wants to eat, they can listen to your bracha and they don't have to make the bracha themselves. V'im yotza eino motzi. However, if someone already made the bracha and started eating his food, he can no longer make a bracha for someone else to exempt them from their obligation of making a bracha. The Rashi adds a little bit here at the bottom. Rashi says, "Chutz mi birchas halechem v'yayin, u'shar birchas peiros v'reichani she'ein on choiva, and other kinds of food fragrance related brachas, they are not something that one is obligated in." In other words, it's not the same thing as, let us say, the bracha for learning Torah, or the bracha that we say in the davening for Kriya Shema, that's obligatory. These are not obligatory. Elah, rather, she'osu lehenes min ha'olam hazeh below bracha, simply one is forbidden to benefit from earthly matters unless you make a bracha. Ubezu ein kan arvus, regarding something like this, so we don't have the concept of arvus, of mutual responsibility. She'eno chova al adam. Lo lusani v'lo livrich. We can't say that the bracha over a piece of bread is the same level of obligation as the bracha that we say in our davening. When we daven, we say brachas in the Kriya Shema section or the Shemona Esrei section or other obligatory brachas. Those are obligatory under all circumstances. However, when it comes to food, you could decide not to eat, and if you've decided not to eat, so there's no bracha that needs to be recited. So it's of a, we call it a lower level of obligation. And because of that, the rule of arvus, of mutual responsibility, does not play a role. We continue in the Gemara. Boy Rava. And now we continue to Amud Beis. Birchas Halechem Shel Matza U Birchas Hayayin Shel Kiddush Hayoyim Mahu. What is the status regarding obligation and hence ability to exempt others when it comes to the bracha we say HaMotzi Lechem Oretz on the matzah that we eat on Pesach night? The matzah we eat on Pesach night, that eating is obligatory. Birchas Hayayin Shel Kiddush Hayom is the bracha that of Borei Pri HaGefen that we make when we also recite Kiddush, ushering in Shabbos or a Yom Tov. So that Birchas Hayayin is part of the Kiddush, and the Kiddush itself is something that's obligatory. Just like the eating of matzahs on Pesach night, the eating of matzah itself is something that's obligatory. What does that do as far as the Birchas HaNenin that accompanies these mitzvahs? The Rashi, second line from the top, Mahu al achilas matzah mekadesh Yisrael lo tiboyalach, regarding the bracha that we make when eating matzah, we make asher kitchan besetzonu al achilas matzah. And mekadesh Yisrael is the bracha that we make in the Kiddush, the text. So that those are not questions. The chayva ninu umapik. Those are clearly obligatory, and therefore one can exempt others. Ela birchas hamotzi ubirchas hayayin mi bayalon. But what we are asking about is the hamotzi lechem min haoretz bracha that you ate, that you say before eating the matzahs on Pesach night, and likewise the borei pri hagefen that you say in the kiddush. What is their status? She'ein bois. The reason they are recited lefi shamavorech tzorach shiyidom. One who's making kiddush. So in the making of kiddush, there has to be a tasting of the wine, and in the making of the on Pesach night, there has to be an eating of the matzah. The evshula henas blow bracha. You're not allowed to benefit to have physical pleasure, physical benefit from consumption, without making a bracha. Inami lo toyim ihu. Even if you don't taste from the wine itself when kiddush is made, but someone else has to drink from it, so there that you've created a situation where a bracha, birchas hanenin, has to be made. But from what angle does it have to be made? It has to be made from the fact that there has to be a tasting of it, and that causes pleasure, and that generates the bracha. So we continue in the Gemara for further analysis. What then do we say regarding these Birchas Hanenin, the Birchas HaLechem, Hamotzi Lechem Haaretz, that accompanies Matzah of Pesach night, and the Borei Pri HaGefen Bracha that accompanies the Kiddush that we make when ushering in Shabbos or Yom Tov? The Gemara gives us two sides of the question. Kevon de Choyvohi Mapik. Since there, the eating of the matzah is obligatory. It's not like the example we gave at the bottom of Amud Aleph, where a person can decide, they can decide not to eat and doesn't have to eat. We can't say that regarding matzah of Pesach night. That matzah you have to eat. V'chein kiddush hayom chovalov, and likewise the kiddush v'yevshur shaloi b'hanah. And the kiddush itself is also something obligatory, and you can't have kiddush without having that benefit of drinking the wine. Vano ef shibolo brocha, and benefit cannot take place without making a brocha. Nim says ha mitzvah tuya bebrichas hano umatik. Well, when you look at things like that, it turns out that the mitzvah is totally dependent on the hano, and the hano is dependent on the brocha. Since there's this this element of obligation, so that gives room, that gives ground for saying that one can say the bracha for the next person. However, there's another side. Oy dilma, or possibly bracha lav chovohi. The text of the bracha, the brichas hanenin, is not an obligatory bracha. If we look at the Rashi, oy dilma, brichas hano lav chovo lemitzvah asya. The hamotzi lechem min haaretz is not an obligation with regard to the mitzvah. Sha'af b'chol hanoyos hino heges. The proof being is that you will say a brichas hamotzi lechem min haaretz or a borei pri hagefen on all types of optional drinking as well. So we can't say that bracha is something that's inherent to the mitzvah of kiddush or the mitzvah of achilas matzah. If it were inherent to those things, so then you wouldn't be reciting those texts, those bracha texts, on other occasions. But you do recite them on other occasions when you're involved with optional eating or optional drinking as well, thereby exposing them as non-truly obligatory brachas because of the element of option that exists in other under other circumstances. So that's the question. The question that has been raised: what is the din of someone who has already been yotze? Can he be motzi others? Toshma, the Omar of Ashi. So he tells us a story. Ki havinon be Rav Poppy have mekadesh lon. When we were at the home of Rav Poppy, he made kiddush for us. So at that point, Rav Poppy, if he hadn't heard kiddush before, Rav Poppy was exempt, was making kiddush to exempt himself and thereby exempt those that were with him. So Rav Poppy's personal obligation is fulfilled at this point. However, when his sharecroppers came in later, they came in from the field. So till they got to Rav Papi's house on Shabbos, they came in late. And what do we see? He's making kiddush for them as well later on, a second kiddush, including the Birchas Borei Pri HaGefen. So what do we see? We see that regarding the Birchas HaNenin that are attached to these mitzvos, even though you were Yotzei, you can recite those brachas for someone else who hasn't been Yotzei yet. So, after all is said and done, when it comes to standard Birchas HaNenin, that are not associated with a mitzvah, just optional eating, if you have not eaten that item and you're making the bracha for yourself and someone also wants to eat that same type of item, so they can listen to your bracha and they are thereby exempted. However, if the individual making, if you have already made the bracha and started eating and someone else comes along and wants to eat that same item, then you cannot make the bracha for them, because it's a matter of option, your personal decision to eat that item. Not so in the case of the brichas hanenin that are attached to a mitzvah that you're obligated in. In such a case, even though you have already fulfilled your bracha requirements, you can nevertheless say the bracha again to benefit someone else who hasn't said the bracha yet. As you can see, that with that, the third perek of Rosh Hashanah comes to an end, and now we start the final perek, the fourth perek, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, Shechalios B'Shabbos. Actually, before we go any further in the Mishnah, we have a topic heading on the side, Tkiyas Shofar B'Shabbos. We're going to discuss the blowing of shofar on Shabbos, B'Mikdash, B'Medina. We'll speak about in the Beis HaMikdash, and B'Medina is outside the Beis HaMikdash. Lifnei HaChorban, Acharei HaChorban. We'll also make reference to two time periods, the time period before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and time period after the destruction. So we read the Mishnah, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liyos B'Shabbos, where Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Saturday, B'Mikdash Hoyu Toiken Avolo B'Medina. There was a shofar blowing in the Beis HaMikdash, but not B'Medina, not outside the Beis HaMikdash. M'Shecharav Beis HaMikdash, upon the destruction of the temple, Hiskin Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai Shiu Toiken B'Chol Mokim Shiyesh Boi Beis Din. So Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai instituted that there shall be a shofar blowing wherever there is a court present. Omar Rebbe Lozer, Lo Hiskin Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai Elo B'Yavne Bilvad. Rebbe Lozer maintains that Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai issued his ruling only with regard to the city of Yavne. Rashi says, what was unique about Yavne is that was the seat of the high court, the Sanhedrin HaGedolah. Sanhedrin HaGedolah was also in other locations as well, and the same law would apply. Rebbe Lozer would acknowledge shofar blowing in those other places that the Sanhedrin had been exiled to. But what Rebbe Lozer is excluding is what we call a Sanhedrin Kitana, a court of 23 judges, that, as far as Rebbe Lozer is concerned, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai would not have made his ruling of shofar blowing on Shabbos. Omru lo. So the Rabbanan responded to Rabbi Lozer and said, Echod Yavne, the Echod Komokom Shiesh Bo Beisdin. Whether it's Yavne or any other place that has a court in there, so there will be shofar blowing on Shabbos. V'oid Zois Hoysa Yerushalayim Yisera al Yavne. And an additional advantage that Jerusalem had over Yavne regarding Shabbos shofar blowing, Shekol Ir Shehi Roya V'Shemas Ukroiva V'Chovo Lavoi Toiken. When it comes to Yerushalayim, any city that was in sight, roeh, or was in sound shot, and nearby, and they could come. So all those places were able to have, would have shofar blowing on Shabbos. Ubiyavne, lohoyu toiken elo bebezin bofar. As far as Yavne, though, is concerned, there would be blowing only in Yavne itself. These points will be elaborated upon in the Gemara. Before we go further into the Gemara text itself, we glance at the side. We have a nosei mivne heading, topic heading, and structural note combined into one. And the triangle that you will see in the Gemara represents ta'amim shaloi toikin b'Shabbos, reasons for not blowing on Shabbos. The Mishnah said that when Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, when the holiday of Rosh Hashanah comes out on a Shabbos, so outside the Beis HaMikdash, there was no shofar blowing. So we want to know, why is that? What's the basis of that? Mino hani milik. From where do we know that there's no shofar blowing on Shabbos outside the Beis HaMikdash? Amar Rabbi Levi bar Lachmo, Amar Rabbi Chamo bar Hanino, Kosuv Echod Oimer, one pasuk says Shabbosoin Zichron Trua, describing Rosh Hashanah as a day where one is reminded of the shofar, but there's no actual shofar. Rather, one will read psukim of concerning the shofar blowing. The Kosuv Echod Omer, Yom Trua Yelochem, that it is a day of actual shofar blowing. So we have two psukim that appear almost contradictory. One pasuk describes Rosh Hashanah as a day where you are reminded of the shofar, and the other says it's a day of actual shofar blowing. How do we resolve the two psukim? Lo kashya, there's no problem. Kan b'yom tov shechalios b'Shabbos. One pasuk, the Zichron Trua pasuk, is a reference to Yom Tov that comes out on Shabbos. Kan b'yom tov shechalios b'chol. And the pasuk that describes actual shofar blowing is where Rosh Hashanah comes out on any other day of the week. The Gemara asks a question. You'll take note that the question lasts a number of lines, and a good part of the question is in brackets. Omar Rava, I midoraisa hi, if that which we say that there's no blowing on Shabbos is a din doraisa, is a Torah-based halacha, so b'mikdash hechi takinon, how could they, yes, blow in the Beis HaMikdash? The Mishnah said b'mikdash hayu token, so that where b'medina they're not toikea, and we explain that was Shabbos because of the pasuk, but in the Beis HaMikdash they would blow. But if the pasuk says not to blow, how could they blow in the Beis HaMikdash? V'oid, and furthermore, melochehi nitzur kol imuti, is the shofar blowing an action of constructive activity? Is it a malacha that I need a pasuk to exclude? In other words, as far as the Torah is concerned, there's no malacha, there's no Shabbos violation in the blowing of the shofar to begin with. To restate that point, we could say that if the shofar blowing were an act of malacha, fall into one of the categories of those actions that are otherwise prohibited, and on a standard Rosh Hashanah day without Shabbos, you are to blow the shofar. In other words, the Torah expects me to do a malacha. Then, when it comes to Shabbos, it would be necessary for the Torah to tell me that which we told you to do on a standard Rosh Hashanah day, do not do on Shabbos, which coincides with Rosh Hashanah. So the Torah is telling me not to do this malacha. However, something that is not a malacha in the first place, where would you have come off thinking that you need a pasuk to tell me not to do it? The Gemara continues. You can see that we have a bracketed section, and by skipping the brackets, by skipping the brackets, you come immediately to the next approach, where it says, Elo Omarova. But in the meantime, we do note that there are brackets, and on the side we have a note, Sograim Einom Lushem Dilug. The purpose of brackets isn't really for skipping. Elo Laharois De'adkan Iker Hakushya. Simply that up till now we have the main question. Besochem Muvo Horeka. Within the brackets, so the background is presented. So now let's go through that. The Gemara had pointed out that shofar blowing itself is not a malacha. It's not a very significant act outside of the fact that you're fulfilling a mitzvah, but it's not a significant Shabbos-type violation if it were in the non-mitzvah context. The Tana, the Bei Shmuel, kol meleches avoida lo sasu. The Torah warns against doing meleches avoida. The Torah warns against engaging in creative activity. By the way, this is an opportunity to simply point out a major misunderstanding that is prevalent amongst many in the public. Many uninformed think that Shabbos is prohibited in work. That's not an accurate translation of malacha. Malacha is to be understood in general, maybe with the exception of the leches hoitzah, it's to be understood as constructive or creative activity. So the Torah says, do not engage in malachas. Yotzisa, to the exclusion of tchia shofar, rudia zapas, the blowing of a shofar, or the removal of bread from the walls of an oven. Shehi, that's rudia zapas, removal of bread from oven walls. Shehi chochma v'eino malacha. It's a skill, it's a talent, but the performance of these things is not classified as a malacha. Therefore, if it's not a malacha, why would the Torah have to tell me that on Shabbos you are not to do it? It's not something that has malacha characteristics to begin with. Elo Omar Rava. Midoy Raisa Mishra Shori. Rava comes with a second approach, that from the Torah standpoint, you can blow the shofar on Shabbos, wherever you are. V'rabbonon hu degozur bo kidarabo. What the Mishnah is alluding to is a rabbinic restriction, like that which Rabbo teaches. So we associate the following as the gzera of the Rabbo, when it, technically speaking, it's much older than Rabbo. Rabbo simply spoke about it, and the Torah records it in his name, but you see the Mishnah, as far as Rava is concerned, is already based on that logic. Well, what does Rabbo say? Hakol chayovin b'tkiya shofar, v'enokom b'tkiya b'tkiya shofar. Everyone is obligated in the blowing of shofar, however, not everyone knows how to do it. And we're afraid that if we allow the blowing of shofar on Shabbos, gzeiro shemu yitlenu biyodo, we're afraid that someone might take it in his hand, and walk with it. V'yelech etzel haboki lumoid, he'll go to someone who does know how to blow shofar in order to learn how to do it. V'avirenu dalet amos b'shus rabim, and by doing that, you will have carried it for a distance of more than 4 amos in a public domain. V'hainu taimo de lulav, v'hainu taimo de megillah. And it's for these reasons as well that we don't take the lulav and esrog on Shabbos of Sukkot, nor do we read the megillah when Shabbos coincides with Purim, because of this fear that a person might take these items and carry them 4 amos in a reshus harabim. To carry something 4 amos in a public domain on Shabbos is something that is strictly forbidden. So, as a result, the Rabbanan simply instituted that we're not going to perform these mitzvahs on Shabbos so as not to tempt people into carrying the items in a public thoroughfare. Mishichora Beis HaMikdash Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai v'chulei. We saw in the Mishnah that upon the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so Rabbi Yochanan Zaki instituted a shofar blowing on Shabbos in other locations, other specific locations where a court is located. We saw in Yavneh, where the Sanhedrin was located. Tonu Rabbanan. Pam achas chal Rosh Hashanah lios b'Shabbos. There was an occasion when Shabbos coincided with Rosh Hashanah. V'hoyu kol he'orim miskansin. All the cities that were around Yavne went into Yavne in order to hear the blowing of the shofar from the shluchei beis din, from the court emissaries. Amar lohen Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai libnei b'seira. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said to the b'nei b'seira. The b'nei b'seira were leaders of the Jewish people at that time in history. We're talking about a time period very shortly after the Churban HaBayis. So the Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, "Niska, let us blow the shofar." Again, it's Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, and it's after the Churban. Omru lo nidon. The b'nei Seiro said back to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, let's discuss the matter. Should we make a gzeira even in a place where there is Beis Din? Should we make the gzeira of Shema Yitlenu? Maybe someone will come to carry it. Even in a place like Yavne, where there was the Sanhedrin Hagodol. Omar Lohem. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said back to them, Niska v'achakach nidon. First let's do the mitzvah, and then afterwards deliberate. Le'achar shetoku, after they blew the shofar, Omru lo, the B'nai B'sera said to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Nidon, let's now deliberate. Omar lehem, so Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said back, Far nishma'o keren b'yavne. Keren is a reference to the horn, the shofar. The shofar was already heard, was already blown. V'ein m'shivin l'achar maisa. And it's not proper to start questioning or discussing that which was already done. Rashi says, G'nayhu shenoitzi laz toyim al atzmenu. It would be a violation, if you will, of self-respect if we would start deliberating and questioning our own actions after the fact. Continuing in the Gemara, Mishachorav Beis HaMikdash, so the Mishnah said that there would be shofar blowing b'chomokum sheish bo Beis Din. Omer Rabbi Elazar, lo hiskin Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai alo b'yavne bilvad. Rabbi Elazar said that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai instituted shofar blowing on Shabbos only in Yavne. Omru lo, then there was what appeared to be a third school of thought that said, echod Yavne v'echod kol mokum sheish bo Beis Din. The Gemara asks, Omru lo, this, what we call the third opinion, Hainu Tanakama, that's the same as the first opinion. The first opinion said that after the temple destruction, wherever there was a court, there would be shofar blowing. The Omru lo, in this quote that we just saw from the Mishnah, they said the same thing. So what do you have this redundancy in the Mishnah? Iko binayu, the Gemara says there is a difference. Bei dino dakroi, a non-permanent type Beis Din. Rashi says Beis Din dakroi l'tanakama takinon. The Tanakama is more, we'll say, lenient in the sense that even where there's a Beis Din akroi, there will be blowing on Shabbos. V'tana di omru lo, savar, that third opinion in the Mishnah holds. Echod Yavna ve'echod kol mokum sheish bo Beis Din kavua dumiot Yavna, and likewise any other place that has a characteristic of Yavna, that there is a fixed court in such a location, there will be shofar blowing on Shabbos. But according to that second opinion, the Omru lo, if it's a place that doesn't have a fixed court, a permanent court located there, there won't be any blowing on Shabbos, even though at times a court gets together in that location. Before we conclude, let us remind you that we can be reached, especially in the context of accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.